for another intriguing edition of the Stack Pack. Perhaps you can help solve a mystery.
Or a murder.
Or a murder. Or...
Or a tragedy, et cetera. What's up, guys? We're the Stack Pack. We're hanging out, covering Volume 2, Episode 4, of the rebooted Netflix show, right? It's number
4.
Yeah.
It is 4. Okay, yeah.
Good thing you're not counting our ballots.
That was a bipartisan joke. Okay, anyway.
Very topical.
As always, I'm David, joined by Dan and Eli in Texas, and we're also joined by frequent collaborator, guest, friend, fan favorite, Dan Derwin from the reddest part of New York in a couple different ways.
How so?
Oh, it's very red, but yes, very, very happy to be back.
I don't know if that'll make it into the podcast. How so, being COVID related and Republican
and a very repub? Yeah,
I didn't know that.
Oh, it's red, baby.
It's red, baby. yeah. So we're joined by Dan. We're talking about the episode entitled "Tsunami Spirits." It's pretty tragic. There's no sugarcoating it. There are ghosts, and there's a lot of death.
Yep.
This episode's really well done, though. I kind of just want to talk about like the production of it for a while, like before we get into like the nitty gritty, because it's gonna get really dark, kids. I feel like everybody listens probably.
If you guys really want to trip out, I highly recommend you change the audio to English descriptive.
Audio descriptive, yeah.
And just close your eyes and just go for the ride.
No, it's visual and it's nice to look at. Well, not nice. Yeah.
No, but can just trip out.
It's beautifully done. It's beautifully shot. It looks so nice on TV. I mean, not nice, but it's all the overhead camera shots and shit are really nice on.
You don't get any of the commentary production. Like, woman looks distraught out the window.
Yeah.
Overdub interview.
Isn't that a headache to listen to?
If
you close your eyes, it's not a headache. But if you're watching it, you're just like, fucking shut this shit up.
It would not be. Not be a headache if I was deaf. Like, I'm glad that it exists, but it's just that,
it's
like,
for sorry, blind.
If I was blind, it wouldn't be a headache. But
do I have to be high?
No. Well, it was.
I mean, that might help. Or drunk.
It would help. Yeah.
It was just good because we were taking notes, and there's lots of subtitles, so it would have taken like so long.
I kept hitting pause.
Just funny that it's just like in between somebody, like it was overdubbing what somebody was saying in English, and then it would just be like, so a woman approached the door soaking wet. A woman approaches the door soaking wet, and she says, like they get the description of what's on the screen. And sometimes he has to say it really, really quick before the person continues talking.
Raindrops fall.
Or there's like the half second shot of the car on the side of the river. So it's like damaged car, muddy riverside. And you're just like, okay, that was only in there for like an eighth of a second.
So I imagine it. You know, like how radio hosts like they call it hitting the post. Like, you know how they're talking when the intro to the song's coming on? And then they have to stop exactly right when the lyrics start. I imagine it being like that.
And this guy also has to have a distinct enough different voice. And so he does have that trailer voice. Damaged car on side of river. And then the other guy who's dubbing it has a very normal sounding, non-raspy voice.
There were a lot of things hitting the post in this episode, but it wasn't a musical cue.
You made him sound like he just had like a raspy, like he just chain smoked like just cigarettes.
I mean, kind of like he said his name at the end of the episode and I wanted to look him up.
like your uncle, your creepy uncle for Thanksgiving that calls you, Hey, come here, kid. Let me
sit on my lap.
He's like
Frank, I'm 30.
He's like the guy in True Lies who, He's like, do it seductively. Do it. Are we smoking a cigarette in a recording booth in True Lies? Do it.
Yeah, that's sexy though. I feel like that's way more sexy than I was thinking. Yeah. I was thinking like a guy with like a polyester suit, like, hey kid, here's a nickel.
Top button popped.
Don't go spend it in one place. Like a 70s, like he was hip in the 70s. Like he's got the big cop.
So now that we got all the giggles out of the way, can we get on with the sad?
Bring on the tears.
I want more giggles. This is like, this isn't as bad as like, but it's almost like one big Lost Loves.
Well,
there's a couple, it's about 20,000 Lost Loves in one episode.
I mean, it's the difference between like, okay, so a ghost episode from like the old show would be akin to like a Fright Night or like a fucking, you know, some goofy B horror movie. And this is like straight up like fucking Hereditary or like fucking Haunting of Hill House, because it's just full of emotion and like, you know what I mean?
Yeah, and it's also not this a is like
house film.
Yeah, it's
yeah. This is like real. It's like a real tragedy that happened. That's what makes it kind of like, ugh,
so bad.
It makes it tough.
It's like comparing Poltergeist to fucking fuck. What's a really dark horror movie? Hereditary is the only thing I can think of.
What about Bob?
What about Bob?
Yeah. So this rebooted ghost story is very dark. So we're going to be talking about a tragedy that happened on March 11th, 2011. A massive tsunami takes over the Tohoku region, right? Did I say that?
Yeah.
The Tohoku region is located in northeast Japan. Around 20,000 people died. And of course, like, you know, you've seen the episode. After this tragedy happens, people started to report supernatural things.
It said the maximum height of the tsunami was 131 feet, 15,854 dead, and 2,533 reported missing.
God, so this is massive.
Yeah, so we'll be talking about the day like the episode does, but what we're really super interested in is these ghost stories, which are pretty, I want to say fun, but I mean, they're all tragic, but it's just like, they're so cool. They're such cool ghost stories.
They're so unique.
And the way that they present them, like, it's one of those things where it's like, oh man, sorry, I just finished reading Christine, and the cop says to the kid after he tells him about the killer car, he's like, if you're lying, you don't know it. You know what I mean? like I believe you believe what you're telling me. And that's how I feel with this episode.
I feel like the production value on this episode in particular, taking into account volume one and volume two, like they're both volumes are done really well, but I feel like for whatever reason, this one visually just really like hits you over the head with how well done it is. The live footage of the tsunami. Yeah.
Just the amount of footage that's relatively that's like good quality.
That one shot where they show the rolling wave of like fire and water rolling through like the crop of like the crops.
And you see those cars, like
the car is just spilling over the edge, like, you know, like tree branches.
Oh fuck.
Incredible.
Yeah. I was talking about really, the cars like trying to get away from it. It's horrible.
Yeah. They really
horrifying.
Captured like the emotion of all of it, like the
showing like that, like the shitty footage of like inside the office buildings of everyone looking up, like in like the Lego store, like they're looking up and you see everything shaking and they're like, it's terrifying to watch.
Those guys look so like they almost, it's like everybody, they almost have no reaction because they're just like, what do we do besides just sit here? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But stand here.
And it seems like they live in a town where that stuff is not common, but like they have like the megaphones like on the corner and like they're like, oh, we're ready for this. We're prepared for tsunamis. Like this is, we've been training for years. Like that's the way they made it sound like.
Yeah. What I also loved in particular was like the way that kind of you get exposed to like Japanese, you're not like, I feel like people in the West, like us, we're so like, because
it's either you believe or you don't believe. Oh, yeah, you're religious or you're not.
We were first founded on like Christianity. It's very like heaven, hell, and that's it. And like ghosts are kind of like taboo. But the Japan, they believe in they do believe that their loved ones are there with them. And so that I thought that was really cool that like you kind of get an insight as to, hey, not everybody believes the same thing as you, and that's okay.
The Reverend explains it like I forget
with
what
the paper
name of
door.
Yeah, the paper door. Yeah. How, you know, once you die, you go through the paper door, but you can still see the shape of a person through the paper door, you know.
Cause yeah, it's, that's a great description. God,
yeah.
It's so beautiful, right?
Yeah, everything God, they say. I'm sure we should give some credit to the way it's translated as well, because it just gives me goosebumps. Like it said, it's a different type.
It's a very spiritual culture. In fact, there's an arena in Japan called the Budokan. And if you have a show in there that's there for like a long period of time, at least once a week, you have to land your entire like lighting package or set and take the roof off take the weight off the ceiling so Buddha can rest, because Buddha is holding up the roof. So like once a week, you have to like take everything down. So
Buddha damn, that's rest. A job.
Cool. And talking about like the way they do things differently, they were even describing when after it happened how it was so strange for them to bury their dead. Like it's all cremation, and the fact that they you know didn't have
it was like the nuclear power
the capability plant. Of cremating so many people, the power plant, yeah, that they had to bury people, and you saw the footage of them throwing flowers in like the open casket and for them we're used to that in our country, but like for them, they don't bury people.
Another obvious thing, and I'm sure, you know, most people know this already, but Japanese culture, like you see everybody wearing masks and stuff, and it seems so natural to us.
They were
now.
Doing it before it was cool.
But,
yeah.
Yeah. But these, but that's just the way
they call us posers. They're like cultures. Posers.
Yeah. They're like, hey,
and Staten Islanders still don't wear fucking masks.
Are they really not?
No. Oh no.
Wow. Dude, that's weird, man. It was kind of like that for a bit, but now everybody's kind of like realized shit. Like
our corner of Texas has been, our corner of Texas has been pretty mask friendly. We like the masks.
I've been meaning to ask you, that guy at work that said that it would be like a cold day in hell before they made him wear a mask. Is he wearing a mask now?
Oh, every day. Doesn't even complain about it anymore.
All right.
Wow. I don't even know who you're talking about, but that story took a fucking turn.
Nah, dude, this guy was really mad. He was upset. He's like, man, they're going to make me wear a mask. I can't do it ever. And ever since the man, he did. He's like, I'm going to quit. He's going to retire next year. He threatened to retire early, but nope, he's still there.
That pisses me off that he has somebody that is bitching about wearing a mask that has like the luxury to be like, I could quit if I wanted to. Like, how annoying.
Yeah.
But if anyway,
I
can quit, good.
I will. Okay, thanks.
I'm glad he's wearing a fucking mask. Yeah, I'm glad. I'm sure there's somebody that wants a fucking job really bad that would be happy to wear a mask.
Yeah, right. Yeah, dude. Yeah, for sure. Yeah, I didn't think about that.
Let's get back to Japan, though.
Right before you jump into the supernatural stuff, I just wanted to point out like one of the things that I was like, holy shit, watching just from the devastation point of view was the guy that they talked to where he found his two kids in the woods and his wife was found 3 miles down the road. Like, dude, that just deserves to be brought up in the aspect that was fucked up.
It's like a tragedy in three parts because he's like, that's like, I found my daughter. She was drowned. She just looked like she was sleeping. She didn't even say she was drowned, but obviously he said that she didn't look.
She had
armed.
A clean
just,
face. Like she wasn't cut up. Yeah.
She just looked like she was sleeping.
Yeah.
And then he talks about his wife, who they found like 3 miles away or something.
And he like glosses right over her too. Like not, you know, like they weren't trying to show anything bad about it, but he was just like, yeah, then I found my wife 3 miles away. And then they found the baby. Like he just like steamrolled through and I'm like, holy fuck.
It's almost it's almost like a comedy of tragedy. You're like, are you, come on, give this fucking guy a break. Like if there is a God or a Buddha or whatever, like Jesus, these poor people.
He's just walking around like with his hands behind his back and he's pointing. He's like, yeah, back there is where they found my first kid.
In the bamboo tree.
Like, yeah, oh, dude, that's tough, man. I thought that same thing. I have kids and a wife, so I resonated with me for sure.
I'm sure, yeah.
It's so, oh God, so rough.
And these are just a few of the stories of the many people that lost people.
20,000 people dead. You know, it's 20,000 families, or, you know, at least half that.
You Dude, know. You think about like the elderly that can't do anything, like they're old. It's just fuck, really, yeah,
just got to take it. Sucks.
Before the Unsolved Mysteries theme even hits, we get like a taste of the supernatural, and we'll just kind of go over that story. The monk is the first guy. He's the reverend of the temple. Yeah. He is a monk, but they do call him reverend. So I don't know. That's,
I think he's lying about the reverend.
Yeah. I don't know. Maybe it's just the way they translated it, but whatever. Well, he seems like a great dude.
He threw reverend in there because he's trying to be hip, you know?
I mean, who knows? Like
reverend run.
I think at the end of the episode, he called himself bishop too. I think I heard that.
He threw a bunch of rabbi. Yeah, he's cool.
He's just going to throw them all out there so you can identify him with him. Identify with him.
Vanguard.
Either way.
Clergy. Clergyman.
Father.
Nobody. There's a little bit of Keith Raniere.
Just call me anything. Yeah.
The first story he tells is, he said that a man wandered in and he asked him, "Who are you?" And the man said he was at the bottom of the sea and he wanted to know if he was alive or dead. And so the guy told him that there was a tsunami and that he had died. So in the Tohoku region is a coastal village town, I guess, called Ishinomaki. It's known for its oceans and mountains and rivers. And they say that the obviously the oceans and the rivers are, you know, where the economy comes from. It's their livelihood with like trading and all that sort of, you know, sea shit.
I think Nori was their number one outsourced product.
That's right. The seaweed paper, right? That makes sushi rolls and stuff.
Oh, good. Delish. That's some good stuff.
Great snack.
Yeah, I think we have some in our pantry, and I've seen Dan just
snacking on some seaweed.
And the sound it fucking makes.
Just eating some nori on the couch.
We have 1,000 sheets. It's fucked. Probably about 997 now. But
the sound it fucking
makes. My only problem.
We've had it for so long.
My only problem is I can't figure out a way to keep them not from going stale once you open the package.
Listen, I have church wafers in my kitchen cabinet, so don't judge anybody.
Oh, wait.
Dang.
Church wafers?
That's metal.
Which kind? I was drunk at a bar, and I bought them on Amazon. And then I ate them with salsa.
I'm going to...
They're actually not bad with salsa.
Dan Derwin
what
just
is
said
that fucking...
he ordered church like a communion wafers and eats them with salsa.
Yeah, I bought them when I bought them drunk on like as a goof, and then they showed up, and I was like, I have to eat these.
It's
and then I was like, well, with salsa, they could probably go down pretty good. So I ate the whole box.
It's like fun, man. The little styrofoam looking ones.
They're like, very light. Yeah, the styrofoam like, ones with the cross on.
He's
them.
Like, I poured him in some cereal, like some milk, and ate him.
I
like
used
cereal.
Some El Paso. Yeah,
that's cool.
That's fucking funny.
I know a priest that used to like.
Yeah. They're only like $10.
Order them for the church. He'd order extra for himself because he would eat them like chips.
I don't think they were so blessed funny. Though.
No, they're not.
No, not from Jeff Bezos.
So
the Church of Bezos.
So basically, so yeah, back to
Church of Tostito.
So the people of Ishinomaki, their biggest thing they made was nori, but they had other sort of import-export things that they made. And they said, you know, the lady says that they loved the ocean until the earthquake happened. And when the earthquakes happen, that means a tsunami is surely around the corner. And this area has had a lot of terrible tsunamis in the earthquakes in the past. They talk about a handful of them starting in 1896. There's a 8.5 magnitude earthquake. And then 1933, there's an 8.4. 1978, we get a 7.4 magnitude earthquake. And then, of course, 2011, the worst one, 9.0. That's a bad earthquake.
So remind me, do they mention in the episode, because I know that it was very brief, like from the time that the earthquake happened to the time that the tsunami hit.
That's interesting.
I think it was like 45 minutes.
I think it was a couple hours, right?
I knew that they had to prep, but they said it wasn't enough time. No matter,
I think it was like they knew that minutes.
The tsunami was going to hit.
Yeah, they played.
The tsunami was coming, and they evacuated the town. And everyone, like I said, they trained for this, and they knew the drill.
Yeah,
and he said, I just knew by the earthquake that the tsunami was going to be too big to avoid.
And they played the. Yeah. They played the warning message, which was like very direct,
fucking
like,
scary, yeah, like ominous.
Yeah, it was. It really was scary. It was just like, you know, if you're close to the water, get to high ground.
Now,
yeah.
Like, meanwhile, the whole fucking town is next to water.
I wanted to ask you about the dates on those earthquakes. They didn't mention anything about if those triggered a tsunami or anything like that.
No, they did not. No,
no, they just go over. Like the earthquakes, and they show like pictures of wreckage
From the past.
Yeah, from those corresponding dates.
Because like it doesn't necessarily matter the size of the magnitude of the earthquake to create a tsunami. It's where it happens, like the epicenter. So like if the earthquake is yes. on land, there's no tsunami. But if it happens at sea, tsunami.
Yeah, I guess.
I mean, that's the question, though, right? Like, how did that guy know? Right. I think it said he was the mayor, right? Was he the mayor of the town? Well, what, like, whatever. He goes, oh, I knew it was going to be too big. So, like, how does he already know, like, where the earthquake was in,
I think,
like, in relation to the.
I'm sure if you've lived through enough earthquakes, you kind of feel like, oh, like, this one's right underneath us versus, like, this one's, true. Like, yeah, 16 miles out at sea and we're fucked.
Or maybe just because of where that place was, it's like, okay, tsunami's coming. They all knew. So yeah, we talked about all the devastating footage, and it really is like just it's impossible it's to surreal. Imagine. Yeah. And then the monk talks about how after the earth, so there's an earthquake, then the tsunami happens, and then the snow, and the monk is just
The snow.
Yeah, and the monk is talking about how sad and defeated he was, and how he was just, he couldn't believe that nature could be so cruel is the word.
Unfair. Yeah.
Yeah.
Cruel. Yeah.
So those facts that you gave like earlier, Dan, that's current, right? Like there's still 2,533 uncounted for.
I guess. Yeah. It says 2,533 missing, but I don't know if that was as of like the morning after or.
Yeah.
Or just like the official. Is that the number when they filmed? Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know. Yeah,
it looks like they filmed in what, February 2019, I think it was?
I feel like there was something they said that made it seem like it was 2 years ago. So I want to estimate 2018. Okay. Because there was something they said like, you might be right. Because it says 2011, it shows the aerial photo before, and then it says 8 years later is the after. So 2019, yeah, I think you might be right.
Okay.
But this is just us guessing when the shit went into production. But just by context clues, we're solving mysteries over here. There's the one guy who tragically talks about losing 54 coworkers in one day, and he talks about how he was in a building and then pressure pushed him out and he was immediately underwater and he couldn't tell like what was up and what was down. And I guess he got really lucky. He said he got to the surface and just didn't know where the water was taking him.
He just floated. He said he was weightless, like just floating around.
Yeah. What can you do at that point? I imagine the same thing. Like your instincts are going to want to fight to stay alive. Right. But at the same time, maybe just kind of letting the water take you
and just kind of
keep your just like your where you're able to breathe at the surface. I feel like that's the best play here. Like,
yeah. You go limp and you just let gravity take you up, I guess, because he said he couldn't tell. He didn't know where to swim.
Because also you're exerting all that energy at first. Like when it's not going to help. You're just all you're panicking is you're panicking, it'll probably kill you faster.
Have any of you guys seen the movie Crawl?
No,
I don't think so.
I think it's on like Amazon or Hulu. It came out like last year and it's just straight survival. Like this cute blonde girl who's obviously a good swimmer at her college goes to get her dad in Florida during a hurricane, and he's in the basement.
Oh, I did see it.
And there's crocodiles.
I saw it in theaters.
That's a fun one, right?
Was that Woody Harrelson who was the father? Who was that?
Somebody.
I did fucking
somebody
see
too
that.
Young to be
theaters.
The father.
I can't believe it.
Yeah, you know, the only reason I saw it is because Quentin Tarantino likes to recommend movies every now and then in articles, and he said that that was a really solid little thriller. And I was like, hey, I'll
give
it a shot.
Me and my brother have that A+, that the AMC
A-list
or whatever. So that must have been a very terrible month for movies that I still went anyway. But, I mean, it was good. It was entertaining, but like...
Yeah, I liked it. You know, I feel like... It's obviously CGI, but it's there's a lot of it's more realistic than you would imagine.
Wasn't a real alligator.
It's just killer crocodiles, you know. There might have been a couple shots of it's just a really solid little survival thriller.
I want to watch that.
Yeah,
it's like the crocodile in Resident Evil.
Which one was that?
I think there was a crocodile in each one in every game. I think.
Did you play the Part 7, the one in the creepy house, the Texas Chainsaw
one? Yes, I did. Loved it.
Dude, I started it, and I need to go back to it, but it's so different.
It's creepy as fuck.
It's really fun, yeah.
It's really well done.
Speaking of games made by great people, the Japanese. All right, now let's go back on over to Ishinomaki.
Real quick, a lot of games got delayed from that tsunami.
Oh, really?
Japanese gaming companies, yeah. The games ended up coming out years later, and you know, some of them were DLC packs and shit, yeah.
So we should clear up that initial earthquake was also the cause of the bigger known tsunami, right?
It was the same tsunami. It didn't cause the bigger tsunami. It was the same tsunami, but further down the coast was the Fukushima nuclear reactor that was also hit. And had a total meltdown.
So that was more like, I mean, I remember hearing about Fukushima specifically. I remember that name. And I guess that, so that's close enough. So that's the nuclear power that went out that fucked them over and made them have to bury their dead, right? Because they didn't have any.
Instead of cremating, power. Yeah.
I feel like that was important to point out.
Cremating is a way to go, man. I got to say, that's how I want to go.
Yeah. Burn me up.
It's crazy to think that there's so many just bodies on top. Like, I don't know if you've ever go to New Orleans, there you can go out, visit the cemeteries. You have to go on a tour now because people would fuck with them so much. But they talk about how
I don't want my body out there in the fucking rain. Bring me inside.
Well, it's people
weird.
On top of each other.
Well,
and stuff.
Yes.
Just throw my body in the trash.
And no, it's
throw me away.
Out there.
So for New Orleans, what it is because. You can't bury people there because the water table is only 6 inches below the surface.
Oh.
The whole fucking thing is
what they
sinking.
Do is they do a natural cremation. So what they do is you build these mausoleums that are basically giant brick ovens. And when you die, they put you inside of that. And over the summer that it heats up to about 800 degrees and you just become dust. And then at the end of the year, grave site keeper comes and sweeps you into your family's ashes. And by doing that, you're not breaking the
bunch
Catholic.
Of fucking creeps.
Well, they do that because, you know, they're mostly Catholics there, and cremation for Catholics is a big no-no. But if the sun and the heat do it, then it was God's will.
Seems like a COVID nightmare.
Yeah, it's like, well, the Black Plague. I don't really kill you with nightmare. My own hands. It's like a hiring for murder. It's like, I didn't kill you personally, but I hired the son to kill you.
Oh, God.
Yeah.
So speaking of reverends and I don't know. Anyway, back to Japan. I had a great segue from Resident Evil to fucking back to Japan. And then we somehow got to New Orleans.
Well, because you were saying it. Like in New Orleans, they have bodies on top of bodies, but it's more like ashes on top of ashes.
There were also bodies in Resident Evil.
Speaking of Resident Evil, Japan. Speaking of, oh yeah, okay. Don't get me starting to talk about Drowning Pool. All right, guys, this is a really heavy subject.
Wow.
You're gonna have to bear with us because we're gonna try to make this as fun as possible.
We're gonna try to swim with the current.
Yeah. Oh boy.
These are getting close to the line there.
Oh fuck!
So let's these are some line straddling zingers.
So let's talk about let's talk a little bit about this Reverend. He said he's a 26th generation monk at this Tsudai Temple. He's a Reverend. He grew up there. He studied to be a monk. He went to school, and he said nothing in his studies could have prepared him. For what started to happen after the tsunami. So we meet this guy named Shuji Okuno. He's a journalist, and he wrote a book called Stay Near Me. And I think – I'm pretty sure that's his book about this phenomenon.
Say it again.
3 months after the tsunami, he goes –
say phenomenon again.
Phenomenon. Phenomenon. So he travels to Ishinomaki 3 months after the tragedy – because he starts hearing of the rumors of people seeing ghosts. And then by October, he said there's a dozen more sightings and stories. So he starts documenting the stories. He talks about a man named Edno who reached out to him because this guy saw some spooky supernatural stuff. He said that this story seems like it's right out of a movie. And they do the reenactment pretty well, too. So he says that the day of the earthquake, he visits a shelter to see if his mom is there. And they said they're going to go check and, you know, I guess look at the names and stuff. And then he sees an old lady staring out the window, right? He sees this old lady staring out the window.
Yeah, and she has the face. It's his mother. She has the face, you know, of his mother.
So he takes a picture.
And clothing, too.
So he takes a picture because he's going to send it to the rest of the family. And the reenactment, it's an actual camera. And I'm like, hey, he's going to take a picture, go get it developed, and then mail it to the rest of the family? I don't know.
No, that was just a very fancy Japanese digital camera.
I'm thinking it was a digital. Well, yeah, it was definitely a digital camera, but maybe it was. It
made that digital noise.
So he takes a picture, and then when he looks at the picture, it's a completely different woman. And then he looks at her, and it's not his mom at all. And that could have just been shock. I don't know. It's really weird because he was like confident enough to be like, all right, time to take a picture and let the family not worry, you know?
Yeah. If you're confident enough to take your phone out, then it's her, right? Like in your mind.
Yeah. So he learned later that she was in a microbus that got washed away in the tsunami. So she was definitely dead at that time when her son saw her. So was it a different lady or was the person just not there at all? I don't know. I guess
I think it was a different lady.
Yeah. I just think he probably saw what he wanted to see. I mean,
that's exactly what I thought too.
That seems a little cut and dry, that one.
So the same guy was writing up these accounts and visiting people, up until like August, 2013. So that was like a couple of years he was there documenting these stories. He said the people of Ishinomaki were like so desperate to see these spirits because they just wanted to see their loved ones because I guess it was just so like random and just so like out of nowhere. And they were all looking for messages. And so some people would be open to it more than others, pretty much what they say. There was like a lady. They talk about the lady who had a toddler who died in the tsunami and his toys were still out and her and her
This was cool.
Yeah, her and her husband are eating dinner, and she just yelled into the living room, like, Sho-chan, let's eat together. Little boy's name was Sho-chan. And then one of his toys just turned on and kind of freaked him out.
And the dad was talking about the manual switch, yeah.
Yeah, he said that it would have been really hard to, like, you know, it would, yeah.
Electrical, somebody had to have done it. Short.
He would have said somebody would have had to flip it,
or the switch could have shorted out and
it's magic, Dan.
way to take the phenomenon and spookiness out of it, Dan. There's got to be a logical explanation to this.
It's fucking magic, bro. Okay.
So on the BTL unit, when the power switch fails,
it was a voice activated train.
And this lady had told her daughter that, like, she pretty much just was, like, waiting to die. Like, she was, like, into it. Like, she wanted to die. She was like, don't be sad. Don't suffer if I'm dead. I'll be happy in heaven because I'm fucking over this shit. She didn't say the last part. But after the electrical shortage, as Dan says, more like a miracle from her Miko from beyond, she found something to live for. And she, I guess those suicidal or tendencies disappeared a little bit. So
now she's an advocate for safe electrical wiring.
Again, I feel like Dan is reading true? Into the wrong part of the story.
No.
So they talk a little bit about how the Japanese don't go to grief counseling because they don't kind of just don't want to forget is the way they make it seem. Like they feel like if they feel too good about losing someone, that means that their like memory is gone. I don't know. That's kind of what I took from what he was saying. And then, of course, yeah, like we were talking about how they don't really separate the dead from the living like we do. And then he talks about his transparent paper door.
How, you and know, it becomes shadow.
The creepiest story to me is the one about all of the people showing up outside this lady's house. So this story starts off on a clear night. This lady's making dinner and a woman knocks on her door and she's dripping. Her clothes are completely wet. The lady goes and retrieves dry clothes and gives them to the lady, and the lady bows very gratefully and leaves.
And I think they mentioned the detail, like it wasn't raining, right? Like the weather was, it was the clear night.
No, it was just, yeah, it was just the woman.
And then the reenactment does this, but they don't explicitly say that later in the night she gets a knock at the door and there's a bunch of wet.
There's a bunch of them. Yeah.
Outside her door. That is fucking terrifying.
Get the fuck away from my house.
It's so scary. To me, that's the creepiest moment of the episode.
And I think that woman, too, she says something like, lost souls don't have a place to go. Didn't she say something like that? Like that was her phrasing.
There's the lady who's like talks about how she was like open to the spirits and stuff. And, you know, because...
Yeah, she told like the kids in the car or something. Yeah,
yeah, because the area was so flattened that she... Her theory is that so many of these spirits didn't like literally just didn't know how to get home. So maybe they just wanted to continue haunting where they lived. And yeah, it's just sad that they make it seem
so
that these spirits don't know that they're dead. And it's so very M. Night Shyamalan. Like, you know, I'm just thinking of Bruce Willis and his red doorknob, you know.
Is this where they also talk about like them asking for rides and like the...
That's the same scene.
So the lady who talks about the kids approaching her car, who is very open to like spiritual, like to seeing ghosts. Her name is Kancho Aizawa, and she was a longtime resident of the area. She's the one who's like walking around the kind of empty lot of where the tsunami happened, and she's talking about how there was houses and things there. And how
she's like, I kind of lived somewhere over here.
Yeah. Yeah. She's like, my house was in that area, and it's just completely empty, nothing now. It's super sad. And then they also show the pictures we were talking about, the before and after, and it's just devastatingly different. And some people are more open to them than others. It's pretty much Stephen King's Shining rules. I wonder if he just jacked Japanese spiritualism. It's interesting. She said she's always been very spiritual and a little odd. Those are her words. They even show pictures of her as a kid, and she said that she thought everybody could see spirits when she was a kid. She said people often ask her what ghosts actually look like, and she says they're slightly transparent. They look like a slightly transparent reflection, like something like a reflection through a glass. So her story about the kids approaching.
But she was in her car, and then there were kids that like approached her car, and she like rolled down the window, and they were just like not asking for a ride home.
Yeah,
but, like, they didn't know where they were, and she basically just like said like, "You guys are dead," and get the fuck away from my car.
Like she, they all make it seem like it's a gesture of sympathy to let them know you're dead. It's so sad. And he said, yeah, they were young men.
Yeah, having to break that news to them, that's crazy.
Yeah, and she didn't say if they disappeared. She just said she said that they were like trying to flag her down, and I'm sure that she's like, I could have just driven off. I'm pretty sure everybody else does, you know? And then we meet this guy who's like a sociology teacher, and his like specialty is sociology of disaster, which sounds like a real depressing field.
Yeah, it's a real niche fucking study, huh?
Yeah, I'll say.
He had that Harry Potter scarf on.
He says that his students, they'll each pick something to cover, and one of his students chose to cover the, you know, the ghost sightings after the tsunami. He thinks that the most credible sightings are the ones of the taxi drivers, because the taxi drivers would, like, pick people up, and then, like, as night would...
Those stories are pretty cool, yeah.
Pretty much, yeah. Night would fall, right? And then they would turn around, and there would be nobody there.
Which is crazy. And then they would pay the fare. So they would drive these people and to where they would go. And then as soon as they got there, they would look back. Nobody was there. But the meter was running, so they would pay the fare. And they said that gladly.
Yeah, like again, would, like a courtesy or like a gesture of sympathy. Like they wanted.
Yeah, we're all in this together. We all lost people in a tsunami.
I'm sorry. I'm a pretty patriotic American. Americans would never do that. They'd just be pissed. They'd be like, fuck, some fucking ghost entered my taxi and now I got to pay his fare. Fuck that. Like,
damn,
no.
Ghosts. I just worked for nothing. I lost someone too. I don't care.
Yeah, no, I feel like that's totally like their just view on things is just way different. And I appreciate it so much.
Oh, absolutely. A lot more understanding.
The highlighted taxi story is the one about, they say 164 days after the tsunami. It's August, which is very, very hot in Japan. A man flags down the taxi. He's in a winter coat. The meter turns on.
Oh, yeah. And that was super, that was super telling, right? Because he was
in a young kid, big coat, hot in August, right? In Japan.
Yeah. And the driver thought something was really funny. He sat alone in silence. The day turned to night. And lo and behold, no one's in the back seat when he turns around. And he said he got out and backed up, ran away.
They showed him step away from the recreation. They showed him get out of the car and like take a couple steps back.
Yeah,
I have to figure out how to do that for my fucking Uber. Just fucking disappear when I get to the finish line.
Yeah, so that's the most credible because you know all these travels were logged. Like all these taxis. You think all these taxi drivers were just lying? I mean. Who knows?
No, no way.
I don't think so.
It seems like the most credible part of like the witnessing is the cab driver stories, at least to me. Yeah,
because they have no skin in the game, right? Like they're not attached to these people. They're just like doing their job and all of a sudden like they're gone.
And the evidence is there with the, like you said before, the fares.
It would be way different when somebody's like really emotional, like when you get like a grieving mother who says, I saw my son, like people are going to be like, maybe you didn't.
Like the first guy saw his mother in a wheelchair. Like that's.
Yeah. Yeah. So we're like, don't know. Just cause that your emotions are involved. These guys are just like, hey man, like I was just working. Some dude stepped in. He said he wanted to go here. I looked back. He's gone. Like,
yeah,
I got nothing.
And like, and
jumped the fair,
the sociology of disaster guy. He thinks it's like a community wide PTSD coping with the tragedy, mass hysteria, ghost kind of thing.
I mean, that also works for me, too. I mean, you know, who the fuck knows?
I agree.
He points to similar disasters with similar casualties and no one reporting mass ghost sightings, pretty much. Which could just – but then they also say that that's a kind of an older area. There's still a lot of unincorporated area in that area of Japan and – it's a little bit more old school, a little more spiritual. I don't know. I feel like I'm not explaining it as well as they do, of course. But
well, you're not Japanese.
It might be a different, a more hallowed ground. I do like what the sociology of disaster guy leaves us with.
Love that title.
There's some things you can't put in a box, right? Ghost encounters. And he also says ghost encounters can remain ambiguous in our lives, which is a general way of saying, you know, the mind sees what the mind wants to see, right? Like one person's for sure ghost encounter is just like, oh, yeah, I totally respect that I'm wearing glasses and there's a light reflected on my eyes and there probably wasn't somebody standing in the corner watching me. But who knows? There might have been.
The only other cooler title out there for somebody is Ganon from The Legend of Zelda, who has the title Hatred and Malice Incarnate. That's just a little bit better than the guy from the university.
Okay, but what about Freddy Krueger? A little bit more. Bastard Son of 100 Maniacs.
That's pretty good. I think the three should be on the Rushmore of titles.
The Rushmore of titles.
Oh man, yeah, that's good. So he's well spoken, right? Ghost encounters can remain ambiguous in our lives. Everything can't just be put into a box. The monk also says that, of course, he's on the other side of this. He's like, scientists like to complain about our ghost stories. And he says, well, he pretty much sums it up in saying that the PTSD is just one person's interpretation. He's not about to, you know, tell people what to think. That's not his job as a monk of this temple, 26th generation,
he's not about to lose his job.
Well, I was going to say he's there to be there for the people, but you went a little more capital with it. A little more. All right, so let's talk about this next case, which is an exorcism.
True unsolved mystery roots.
It's not really a next case. It's like kind of like the part two. Like if there was one movie about tsunami ghosts, the sequel would be the exorcism movie
of tsunami ghosts.
Yeah. Oh God, that's honestly, that fucking writes itself though. Like,
we're hitting the third act of the episode.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
I feel like that's its own movie. It's been 2 years since the ghost attacks Ishinomaki. But yeah, I'm sure there's a reason why there hasn't been a movie made about this phenomenon, because it'd probably be.
This segment was really good though. I really like, usually like exorcisms and possessions can be corny, you know, if they're portrayed, especially in recreations and stuff. Just yeah. This one was not, like I said, this one was just not funny. This whole episode.
Yeah.
Was not funny at all.
Well, and it could have been very easily, but the way they've been managing to do these reenactments, which is more, you know, like you don't really see up close of people's faces. It's much more like, you know,
a lot of innuendo
and blurry shots and style, which is really great.
I like even it. Even like the way for her, she's anonymous, and like they don't have the typical rainy window with the fucking palm tree and like the silhouette black, you know, the woman's all covered up.
Yeah, she's like,
they just show her chin, they show her ear. It was a different way to do it.
It says Jane, like, yes, the ghosts were inside me.
Quote unquote
Jane,
Sharon.
Jane, not Jane.
We're talking about Ami.
Yeah, yeah. All right, let's talk about this kind of like third act exorcism twist. The Reverend guy we've been hearing from the whole episode tells us about this woman. She came to him kind of late at night and she said she was ill. And she said that she said, I feel many people inside me. Please help me. And he said he had stuff like this before. So I guess he had like actually done semi-exorcisms or something close to something in the realm of before. But he said nothing was like this. The lady said, many spirits are entering my body and I can't stop them. This Jane Doe, or as they call her, Omi, not Omi.
It's spelled A-M-I, yeah.
Yeah, the way they say it sounds more like Omi, but it's spelled Ami. Anyway, it's not a real name, so.
Omi, not Omi.
Yeah.
In Dave's words.
She basically says that she can only feel pain and that she wants to die.
Omi, feel pain. Oof, oh, sorry. Omi,
feel pain.
Oh, boy.
She wants it just to completely be done.
I'll be here all week.
She said there's a spirit of a little girl crying inside of her, and there's also a spirit of a man who was holding her leg and wouldn't let go. It's very specific, like, but like puts a picture in your head in a
really creepy
way. Yeah. So apparently he gets this spirit talking, and the spirit said, who are you? And he said, I'm Reverend Kaneda. I'm the reverend of this temple. And the man said, "What's the Reverend doing here?" And then she said that she could just see the man screaming this, like, outside of her body, I guess. I don't know. The way that it's worded, I had to, like, go back. But I think that she's explaining seeing the man screaming. But then at the same time, I'm like, I get confused of her telling the story and the Reverend's wife telling the story. You know what I mean?
Yeah, like, she kind of came in out of nowhere and she was like, telling the story too.
Yeah.
So like, it gets I kind of feel like that got confusing.
It gets a little jumbled.
It took him out of it, I think. Yeah.
So basically they prayed, they lit incense on the Buddha and it has to like completely burn out. And they pray the whole time. And that's what lifted her of her burden.
But then she came back multiple times. They said that she showed up like every night at 7 PM, not every night, but she would show up between like 7 PM and stayed till like 3 a.m. And she would just keep coming back with all of these like spiritual burdens.
He says it like a joke. Like, I said she could come back anytime. And
she sure
and
did.
She sure did.
Yeah. They had the, she was telling the one story about how she saw a brother and sister running on the beach or something. And the sister couldn't hang on to the brother's hand.
Oh, and, so terrible.
And she was, you know, crying. Oh. And then, like, towards the end of that, I guess, story, they're talking about how the sister was trying to apologize to the mother. And, oh, it's fucked up, man.
The Reverend's, like, calming her down. And she just says, no, she wanted her mom so she could just say sorry for letting go of the brother's hand.
Oof. Yeah, it's fucking shitty.
The wife comforted the lady and said, I'm your mother and, you know, I'm here for you. And. Ay, ay, ay. It's
That was good. Really dark. That was really, really dark and fucked up. But it was a good story. It was just,
You know,
shitty.
And I feel like one of the documentarians literally asked her, like, doesn't this sound like a movie to you? And she's like, because one of the things she says, she's like, it's not a movie. And she's like, we don't like to tell people this. And, you know, stuff like this happens. And it just happens.
But then Netflix paid us that money. And
yeah.
Yeah.
We decided to unravel our story.
We don't tell people this, money. But you kind of are.
Yeah. What's happening right now?
I feel like, though, that they did kind of, they kind of were picky and choosy. Like, we don't do this often, but we're going to allow you guys to kind of like, it felt. It's
just going out of their way to say that it was a special story circumstance. At a special time.
It's yeah.
Because they had that Netflix money.
That's the impression I got. I didn't think that there was any like currency transfer. Like, we're gonna be all
this money. Well, yeah. I mean, we all know they got paid for being on there, but it's like, you know, it's part of the region's history, like current history. Yeah,
it's one of the stories, the many stories.
Yeah, and I'm sure, you know, knowing these people, I'm sure they, you know, put all the money into their temple, put all the money into helping their community, because we do see this guy towards the end of the episode. He's just hanging out at the community center.
Driving a Ferrari.
The sign.
Bumblebee yellow.
They have like cakes and coffees, and the sign says cleverly, Café du Monk.
Yeah, he had his own cafe.
Not the Café du Mall, right? Is that what that was a play on?
Café du Monk.
Correct. In, Café du Monk. Right? To New Orleans. Back to New Orleans.
Back to New Orleans. Whoa.
Talking about bodies, and now we're talking about.
See?
Creme brulee.
Give me a beignet and some coffee that tastes like dirt. I'm in New Orleans. What's that coffee called?
Cowboy coffee. And chicory.
Chicory.
Yeah, chicory. Coffee. Oh, yeah, I'm not a big fan of chicory, man. I've had it.
Yeah,
that
does taste like dirt. I think the monk had his face on the logo, too, right? It was like...
I hope so.
They were wearing hoodies and shit. Was it merch?
I hope there's merch. If there's merch, I'm looking for it.
A fucking Café du Monk tank top for Eli.
The lady wanted to know if she was mentally ill. She asked the monk if she was mentally ill, and he said no. He said, I'm not going to treat you like you're mentally ill because, you know, clearly there's something else going on here. And I think that's a very self-aware thing that most mentally ill people don't ask. It kind of, to me, adds a little dash of credence to everything, that she would be aware enough to be like, am I crazy?
And didn't the monk say, one of the last things that he said He said, if you, it was kind of like cut and dry. He said something like, if you see ghosts again, tell them that they're dead. Remember? Yeah. He just said, like, yeah, we'll take care of the city. You know, we'll bear the burden of, you know, rebuilding our cities and our communities. But just the way he started that sentence at first, I was like, man, that's fucked up. Just tell them they're fucking dead.
Yeah,
just
tell them they're dead.
The way I wrote the notes is, he said, if you see them, tell them they are dead. There is a place for you. We will stay in the city and rebuild. Don't worry about us. Kind of that, yeah, that same vibe.
It was like uplifting, but it came in hot.
Yeah, it's very blunt. It's like, you guys are dead and we're sorry. This sucks.
Well, also, going back to like the story about the them being lost, the community, the city had changed, right? Because like the geography of like the homes that were leveled, there was, there
they
was not
the, a, the, they showed the top, like the top view, like, you know, 9 years later.
So these guys are trying to find their homes that they used to live in, and they're like, they're not there anymore. So
yeah, that's what
they did a comparison too.
That's what the lady was saying. Koshuma. I forget her name.
She like cracked the window down in the car, and she was like, you're dead. Move.
Get out of here.
On a rainy night.
Move, kids.
Get out of here. No one's going to stop for you. I'm going to tell you. You're dead. Yeah. Yeah.
Out of the street.
She was just saying that these spirits had no – they didn't know where to go, which is very tragic.
So I guess just word got around that this girl was possessed, right? And they were like, hey, this is girl over here. We can –
That's what they make it seem like. I forgot to mention that. So after the first night, it was
dragged
like
her in.
It was like, you know, hey, word is on the ghost grapevine that we can just jump into this lady but it seemed like they were using her as some sort of vessel to like get to the other side. You know, like they would jump in, the monk would like ease them, you know, to the light, because I forgot to mention that the little girl, like once the mom is holding or the wife is holding the spirit of the girl, right? You get what I mean?
Yeah.
She, being the wife, told her to go towards the light.
Yeah, I forgot that too. That's wild. Very sad.
The way the monk explains it is there's like a range of spirituality, of ghost seeing abilities that is like, you know, pretty small sliver for most people, but for other people's, it's very wide and very big. And my grandma and I, we used to have whole conversations across the kitchen table without saying a word. She just called it The Shining. Yeah, sorry.
And the Scatman Crothers came in and asked Doc if he wanted some ice cream.
And he had those sweet paintings by Lester Eubanks.
So, Lester Eubanks.
Did you listen to our last episode or not yet?
No, not yet.
Oh, God.
We're talking about how Lester Eubanks' paintings look like Scatman Crothers' paintings in The Shining, like the ones.
Oh, no. That was my own Shining pull.
But you know what I'm talking about? How Scatman Crothers has like those like Afro babes, like naked Afro babes in his.
Yes.
In his cool Florida spot.
Hey, so this brings up a good point. Like, I have a question. Do you think that if you believe in afterlife and ghosts, do you think that you're more prone to see them? Or do you think like you can see them regardless?
I don't think it has anything to do with that.
I was going to say that if you believe it, it's almost like you want to see it, right?
Yeah. I feel like that fucks you up a little
more.
You're
setting yourself up for,
failure.
Looking for it or failure.
So you think the opposite. You think that if you're looking for it, you won't see it.
Yeah. I feel like
interesting.
If you got it, you got it, because if you're too open, then you're never going to see anything. I don't know.
I mean, I've never seen anything, and I believe in it to a degree. Like, I believe that it's possible, and I always say that I wish I saw a ghost. So I think the fact, like, in Dave's view, if I want to see one badly, I won't see it. But the person who goes, fuck that shit, I don't want to see a ghost, they're the one that's going to see it in the kitchen mirror.
So Dan, actually, we told Eli about this, but we were like, we have to tell you in person. And then we made him wait until we covered the ghost episode.
Yeah, we had to get the ghost story.
But I'm convinced that some ghostly shit happened in or around Dan's vicinity. Not completely towards, I don't know. But Gerald, spin
Dish
the
girl.
Tail. You remember?
Yeah, I remember. So I started this new job where part of my job is I install water heaters, but the main job I'm supposed to be doing is shutting down evaporative air conditioners and turning on furnaces.
Right. So I don't think
make an air go away and making heat come.
I don't think Dan Derwin understands what an evaporative cooler, like a bunch of homes in El Paso have them.
It sounds high tech.
It's not it's at all. It's actually okay.
Basically, you take a box, you put a fan in it, you cut four holes into the box.
Yeah.
You put some straw pads on those holes.
It's literally
and
straw.
You just spray it with water.
With
and
water
and suck cold air in through that.
Yeah, and that's how it's supposed to cool your home.
Wow.
It works here because it's dry, but if it's humid, it just would not work. It would just be completely useless.
Yeah. A lot of the older homes, they do have evaporative coolers, which they've since they I think a lot of them are switching right to like
yeah.
regular. Yeah, it's fucked.
So we get this call to turn on a heater at this house, and we show up and it's snowing, and we pull up to the house, and the first thing we notice is like, oh, like it's a refrigerated unit on top of the house. So, you know, it should just be, you know, a switch on and done. So
yeah.
We come to find out before we even start the service call that when they shut the heater off last year, they went ahead and closed the gas valve on the roof. So we needed to go up to turn the gas valve back on. And I told my boss, I was like, hey, like it's fucking snowing. It's probably not a good idea for me to go on this roof and just, you know, fucking Tim the Toolman Taylor it back fucking down into the yard. So yeah, he's like,
bust your ass.
So he's like, all right, so I'll let our customer know that we're going to come back tomorrow. He goes to the front door. He knocks on the door. He tells him like, hey, like it's not safe for us to do this call. We'll be back the next morning to come and to go and do it. Blah, blah, blah. We leave. I go back the next day to go do it. And I knock on the door. This woman comes to me. She's like, were you guys here yesterday? I'm like, yes, ma'am, we were here. And we told you guys that we couldn't do it. It wasn't safe because there was ice and snow on your roof. And she's like, did you come into my house? I was like, no, like we came to your door and told you that it was not safe when we left. She's like, well, my 85-year-old grandmother woke up in the living room and found a tall man named Charlie just standing over her.
And wow.
Like, well, there is no guy named Charlie for one, and we never went into your house. So
I think she might have been having a sexual fantasy.
Or
and it became this like whole fucking like debacle. Like she was yelling at me from her yard. She's like, do I need to call the cops over here to fingerprint? It was just like, ma'am, like we never went into your house. But yeah, I'm not turning on your heat now. So have a good day.
Listen, you old bag.
Well, this was the granddaughter.
This is the granddaughter, like bitching.
Sorry, so who did they talk to? Who did you guys talk to?
Dan talked to the guy.
I didn't talk to the person. I stayed in the truck, but my partner got out and talked to the grandson.
You mean the day of?
The day of.
The next day, the lady was yelling at you.
The next day, the lady was yelling at me, but the day of when supposedly this person was standing over her mom. Like, we never went into the house. He went to the front door. He told her son or the grandson, like, hey, it's not safe. And we're like, we dipped out, but her mom is insistent that some
you guys went inside.
Fucking dude named Charlie was towering over her.
That's so her creepy. Mother. I mean, she could just be like, you know, maybe have early onset dementia or.
How old is this lady?
In her 80s.
85. Like she kept saying, she's like, my 85-year-old mother swears on her grave. And she's like, well, hold up. First off, you're swear saying that much longer. She's 85. And you said she hasn't left the house in 6 months.
Which, damn, like, what's she going to do? Run for president?
Like, I don't know. When my grandfather became a shut-in, sundowning syndrome started to kick in very rapidly, so.
It's a ghost story, Dan. She saw a ghost in a story.
Or maybe it's a ghost.
And that's that.
Who knows?
I thought that was a fun story that I wanted.
Charlie the Ghost.
That is a good one. I like Charlie. I like Charlie's appearance. It was a good part of the story.
Charlie the Ghost.
Apparently he was dressed like a 1920s flapper.
Oh, that was definitely her sexual fantasy, this 85-year-old woman.
You're full of shit.
Oh, yeah.
Did one of you come in?
He played piano. He smoked a cigarette out of one side of his mouth.
Did one of you come into my mother to my mother's house in period garb?
he had the suit jacket flaps over his ass.
Well, I did a little research, and where her house is located actually sits on where an old-timey saloon used to be.
Sure.
I thought you were going to say
it was
West.
A cemetery.
That's what I was waiting for, too.
We did do a little research, and the lady who answered the door has been dead for 30 years.
Yeah. Her name was Charlie.
Yeah. Oh. L-E-I-G-H. Charlie. Female. It's not really... The unsolved mystery is that there are ghosts, right? And you can't prove that ever, so... yeah.
Unless you catch one like a Ghostbuster.
I mean, yeah. I mean, Dan Aykroyd probably thinks he can.
Unless you're Egon.
You guys know that Dan Aykroyd thinks he's an actual Ghostbuster, right?
No, I did not know that.
Yeah.
I would.
He's got G-Men stories. He believes he's a hard into aliens and stuff. He's an interesting guy, actually.
Yeah, he's a little over the top. Yeah.
Yeah. He has this story about how he was filming this show for sci-fi that was going to be talking about conspiracies, and he saw a car drive into nothing. Like he saw a car, and then he turned and the car was completely disappeared, like in a split second later. You can hear him talk about it. It's crazy.
That's weird.
He thinks the minute and then hours later, the show that he was filming got canceled on sci-fi. It was gonna be like a conspiracy show.
It's all about timing.
It's a fun story. I don't know if it's true, but...
Yeah, I like Dan Aykroyd.
Maybe that was just a fucking... Maybe the Men in Black are also sci-fi Universal executives? I don't know.
Yeah, maybe.
You never know.
Got that dumb wand.
But... Yeah, so... I think... What's weird about this story is we talk so much about this factual... tragedy and all those lives lost, and the ghost stories kind of come as like a spooky second. And then of course the sequel, the less regarded sequel, is the whole exorcism part,
The Exorcist,
which is crazy. God, yeah,
it was like, cool to see that memorial thing too at the end where they showed them, I think last year, I think it was March 11th 2019, and they showed them all, you know, lighting candles and stuff outside, and like that was a nice shot.
Yeah,
and it was translated. The graffiti on the wall was translated.
It was like a nice, like a kind of bookend of, you know, of their, because like they said, you know, they don't have as big of a separation between life and death as we do over here in America. Yeah. So it's like it feels more positive than sad there at the end when they have all their lanterns. And it also reminds me of that really, really sweet movie Kubo and the Two Strings, which is a really cool stop motion kids film, but it's artfully done. Have you seen that, Eli? You should show the kids that movie.
No. Kubo, never.
It's the same studio that made like Paranorman. Like they still do stop motion.
Oh, I like Paranorman.
They did Box Trolls and Paranorman.
Box Trolls was good too.
Dude, those guys are like, they're like the punk rock version of Pixar.
Pixar, Laika. Still doing it.
Punk rock school. Pixar.
Yeah, Laika Studios. Laika. I haven't seen their newest movie. It's where Zach Galifianakis plays Bigfoot.
Is that them?
Yeah, we
watched that. I watched that one.
Is it good?
It's okay.
Really? I want to see it.
It wasn't as good as Box Trolls. I like Box Trolls a lot.
So thanks a lot for hanging out with us, Stack Pack. Thanks, Dan Derwin, for joining us.
Actually, you know, Dan.
What's fucked up? We didn't even talk about how you, like, one of the reasons I wanted to have you on the episode is because you've actually been to Japan.
Yes.
We've been fucking around for an hour and a half.
We didn't talk about that at all.
Actually, we talked about it, I think, before we started. I think we talked about it for a few minutes then. Yeah. I went in March 2019. Tokyo,
when they
Kyoto.
Were filming this.
Yeah.
If you went to Ishinoki.
Oh, you're right. Yes,
Ishinoki,
you're right.
Fuck.
Wait, you went in... Oh, wait, that was 2019. I was like, March
2019. March 2019 is when they filmed that at the then piece that we just talked about, that memorial. Yeah. And that's when they filmed the segment, I guess, was around then. But we were in Tokyo, Kyoto, and Osaka. And Osaka and Tokyo are both on their respective bays. So, like, we were on the water, but, you know, obviously nothing happened or anything like that. But Japan is highly recommended. Food, people, cleanliness.
Are people really
culture,
nice?
Did you meet everyone is super nice.
Did you, like, meet some locals, or is it more just, like, other travelers kind of?
I think two or three nights we went to local bars, and that was just really interesting. It was
that's cool.
You know, talking to it's just the whole place is surreal. I towered over every single person there. I felt like I'm 6'3". So
did a lot of people know
Dan, you're 6'3"?
Yeah.
Are you
really? I wear lifts. Yeah.
Man, that's I'm a shorty.
I remember meeting you. That's crazy. I don't remember you being taller than me.
I think I was wearing my heels that day. My license says 6'3", so.
David, how tall are you?
Like, not even 6'2", like 6'1 and a half. Like, that's why everyone who's like, I'm 6 feet. I'm like, you're fucking full of shit.
And then, Rodan, how tall are you?
According to my driver's license, I'm 6'2", but yeah. David,
it's all about the driver's license.
I'm a little taller than Dan.
David begs to differ.
I'm like 5'11", and usually I'm like pretty tall, like I guess I'm like slightly above average, but like every time I hang out with you guys,
that's
I feel
just
like
what
super
Jocelyn
small.
Tells you.
I was going to say, Eli, I think you just got too used to walking around your house with your kids and your wife.
That's probably it. No,
like,
man,
I'm
even at
big.
I'm slightly above work, average.
Even at work, I am. I'm slightly above average. Like, everybody else is like 5'8", 5'9".
Do you guys size up 10. in the locker room or what?
At the locker room at work and everyone sees
no,
your
I just see them. Everyone, like, I walk around
man,
and
you're
I
tall.
There's a locker room at your work?
I feel like slightly, I feel just slightly. Like, I've got that slight edge, but then whenever I get around, like, really tall people, like, above 6 feet, I'm like, oh,
locker room talk is all about how tall you are. That's all we talk about in locker rooms. Hey, look at that tall guy. How tall are you? What does your license say? But yeah, Japan is highly recommended for whenever we're allowed to travel again. There's a lot of shit to take in, and you can't go for any less than 2 weeks.
That makes sense. But anyway, thanks for listening, guys. We'll be back to talk about this poor church lady who ends up in a river. And that
oh, the lady
fun.
In the lake. Yeah,
I forgot. Yeah. And we might have to have
that sounds
back.
Like a horror film.
Yeah. That one's actually a good name. Some of the names in Volume 2 have been kind of boring. Death, Row, Fugitive.
Yeah, Lady in the Lake. I think the story lived up to the title. It was a pretty good episode.
Washington Insider Murder. Yeah. Lady in the Lake at least has some pizzazz.
Yeah. It's got some oomph.
All right, this has been a blast, guys. But let's get us out of here. For every mystery, there is someone somewhere who knows the truth. Perhaps that someone is listening, and perhaps that someone is you. We'll be back next time. See ya.
See you guys. Thanks.